Because Russia has attacked Ukraine and we must help Ukraine to defend its sovereignty, not to try to impose any kind of deal.
Diplomacy for Ukraine. It's Tuesday, March 22nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Kiwis kick in military aid to Ukraine. African mercenaries ready for Russia. Myanmar's human rights record. Asia losing Russian tourists. And World Water Day. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A critical week for diplomacy as President Joe Biden heads to Europe for a special NATO summit aimed at defusing the four-week conflict in Ukraine and imposing more consequences on Russia for invading its western neighbor. European nations are also likely to share their perspective closer to the front line. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from Washington with reporting from Bill Gallo in Seoul.
President Joe Biden heads to Europe Wednesday in hopes that face-to-face talks with NATO, European, and G7 leaders will achieve what virtual diplomacy has so far failed to do, end Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The White House recognizes that this whirlwind trip aims to achieve a lot in very little time. He begins with the NATO summit on Russia Thursday.
He will also reaffirm our ironclad commitment to our NATO allies and to defend every inch of our NATO territory.
In addition to imposing strict sanctions against Russia, the U.S. has also flooded Ukraine's coffers with $13.6 billion in military and humanitarian aid. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has begged the United States, to no avail, to establish a no-fly zone over his country. He has repeatedly warned that Russian President Vladimir Putin will not stop at Ukraine. A recent Russian strike on the western city of Lviv hit just 80 kilometers from the Polish border.
Next will be Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Moldova, Georgia, Poland. Then they will be walking until they reach the Berlin Wall.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken recently visited the Baltic nations to hear their concerns. Latvia's Deputy Prime Minister and Defense Minister told VOA that NATO members near Ukraine want to see some fundamental changes.
That basically we need a different type of forward presence for all the nations, starting from the south of Turkey till the north of the Baltics. And also the strategy should be, our philosophy of our defense of our alliance should be set in a different way.
Latvia's foreign minister told VOA that Eastern Europe sees no quick end to ongoing talks between Ukraine and Russia.
Our position is that Ukraine clearly is the country that should decide what kind of agreement it wants. No red lines, no pushing Ukraine, because Russia has attacked Ukraine and we must help Ukraine to defend its sovereignty, not to try to impose any kind of deal that wouldn't be in the best interest of Ukraine. So from that point of view, I don't want to be rather optimistic or pessimistic. I want to be realistic. I think that it may take some time.
But analysts ask whether there is a point in NATO and others holding discussions without either Ukraine or Russia at the table.
I'm afraid I see no possibility of any kind of resolution here, which includes signatories from NATO countries, Ukraine and Russia. And the very reason for that is that Russia's principal objective is to ensure that Ukraine is not a westward-facing country. And if that is its objective, and Ukraine's principal ambition in life, so to speak, is to be more Western and more westernized, then there is nothing that NATO can do to solve that.
From Brussels, Biden will head to Poland's capital on Friday. Meanwhile, less than 1,000 kilometers away, Ukraine burns. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
We invite you to read more on our top story by going to our website, voanews.com. Plus, follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia, or you can find us on Facebook, VOA Asia. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Ramos Horta leads an East Timor election. Junta under pressure to restore Myanmar electricity. Hong Kong to ease strict COVID measures. North Korea fires more rockets. China signs new rules on supervision of military equipment purchases. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. New Zealand will send non-lethal military equipment to Ukraine. The government in Wellington is also providing more financial assistance to Ukraine following the Russian invasion. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
New Zealand is to spend $3.46 million to help Ukrainian forces fight the Russians. The government in Wellington said the additional money would mostly contribute to a NATO trust fund that provides fuel, rations, communication equipment and first aid kits. The New Zealand military will also provide tactical equipment, including body armour that's surplus to its own requirements. Delivering this non-lethal aid would most likely be by New Zealand Defence Force aircraft and could also involve the Australian military. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said Monday that her country is eager to help.
Today the government has also decided to support the Ukrainian armed forces with tactical defence equipment such as body armour, helmets and vests. Today's announcements add to the rolling economic sanctions we've imposed through the newly enacted Russian Sanctions Act, as well as $6 million previously provided in humanitarian support, bringing our total contribution to $11 million. The sanctions imposed from around the world are having an effect, and so New Zealand will continue to play its role in supporting our partners to oppose this war.
New Zealand authorities haven't decided to supply lethal aid to Ukrainian forces. It has, however, imposed financial sanctions and travel bans on several Russian politicians and military officers. The groundbreaking law allows New Zealand to freeze the assets of those associated with Russia. Prime Minister Ardern said it wouldn't be a surprise if New Zealand was hit by retaliatory sanctions by Russia. She said the February 24 invasion of Ukraine by Russia was a huge disruption to the international rules-based order. The government has said that New Zealanders travelling to Ukraine to fight in the conflict would probably not be breaking any domestic laws, although the official advice is for citizens not to travel to the region. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, fighters for hire. Happening now in Asia, a China Eastern Airlines plane of 123 passengers and 9 crew members crashed in the mountains of southern China on Monday. Firefighters were seen rushing to the site, but there have been no reports of any survivors. The plane was flying from Kunming to Guangzhou when it went down. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. So happy you've decided to join us here on VOA Asia. Russia has deployed mercenaries to African countries for years. New reports, though, indicate that some of those battle-hardened soldiers may be heading to Ukraine to take part in Russia's invasion of its neighbor. In this report, VOA's Salem Solomon looks at what the inclusion of mercenaries into Ukraine might mean.
As Russia continues its invasion of Ukraine, some observers are warning its forces may get support from an unexpected source, Russian-linked mercenaries stationed in Africa. For years, the Wagner Group, a private military organization with close ties to the Kremlin, has been operating in various African countries, including Libya, Mozambique, Sudan, and the Central African Republic. Now, as Russian President Vladimir Putin looks for added manpower for his invasion, experts say he may be calling some of these fighters to work closer to home.
My understanding right now is that taking mercenaries from Central African Republic to Ukraine, it's a way of saying, well, you have the experience on the battlefield, you've been trained so well, you know, you've spent a lot of time in Africa, and you'll be useful going to Ukraine.
Obagi's reporting indicates approximately 500 mercenaries have left the Central African Republic to take part in the Ukraine invasion. Britain's Daily Mail reported that some of these fighters are part of a hit squad to assassinate Ukrainian officials, including the president. That reporting could not be confirmed. And CNN reports Russia plans to deploy 1,000 mercenaries to Ukraine, citing an unnamed U.S. official. The official told CNN Russian mercenaries that are already in Ukraine have, quote, performed poorly, end quote, and as many as 200 have been killed in the fighting. Despite this, Owaji says, these fighters from Africa could still be valuable because of their experience.
These people have been very active. And mind you, a lot of those who came, you know, to the Central African Republic in the first place were brought in from Libya, you know, were brought in from Syria, people who have been involved in fighting, in war, so to speak.
Wagner's track record in Africa includes accusations of extrajudicial killings, rapes, and other human rights abuses. While not a natural fit for the conventional war in Ukraine, they may be tasked to do things that Russia does not want linked to their regular forces, say some experts.
The Wagner Group is a great solution for foreign intervention on the cheap. What Russia is doing in Ukraine right now is not that. It is not intervention on the cheap. So in some ways, they have less utility than they would in African countries. However, those Wagner Group soldiers that have had experience fighting with proxy forces, local partners, that is the exact type of thing that we'd expect them to be asked to do in Ukraine. Essentially work to reinforce local pro-Russian forces, work alongside them, in some ways enhance their capabilities, and also provide an additional degree of command and control, but not necessarily accountability.
Whether or not they're called to Ukraine, Wagner forces continue to pose a threat to African countries.
We have watched Wagner, this mercenary outfit, work on the African continent. We've watched them in the Central African Republic, Sudan, Libya. They don't follow anybody's rules but their own. They will exploit the country. They will break laws. They will do gross violations of human rights. They will kill innocents and civilians.
Wagner's track record, General Towson added, is clear. They make countries less stable upon arrival. They seek to gain an economic benefit by exploiting natural resources, and they refuse to leave when asked. Despite the fog of war, analysts say they will be watching closely for any signs of mercenary activity in Ukraine. Salim Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
Read and see much more on this story and many others at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
Happening now in Asia. There are more than 3 billion COVID-19 vaccine doses throughout the 31 provincial-level regions in China as of Sunday. Elders are being pushed to receive the vaccine due to their weak immune systems. Health facilities are also being provided vaccinations. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. The United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights warns Myanmar's brutal military dictatorship is destroying the fabric of society and putting the state at increased risk of collapse. The High Commissioner presented her report to the UN Human Rights Council on Monday. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In her report, the UN Human Rights Chief presents a dismal picture of a country whose economy, security, freedoms, human rights, and future are systematically being destroyed. 13 months after a military coup overthrew Myanmar's democratically elected government, Michelle Bachelet says the human rights of the people are in profound crisis and the country is in total disarray. She says formerly stable areas of the country are now beset by widespread violence. She says the economy is on the brink of collapse, with almost half of Myanmar's population of nearly 55 million expected to be plunged into poverty this year. Despite the consequences, she says people continue to protest the military's harsh repression of their rights to freedom of assembly and expression. She says dissenters are severely punished, noting many are killed, subject to mass arbitrary arrests and torture.
Credible sources have recorded the death of over 1,600 individuals, many engaged in peaceful protest. At least 350 of those killed died in military custody, over 21% of the total death. Since the 1st of February 2021, over 500,000 people have been forced to flee their homes.
She notes at least 15,000 people have fled the country. This is in addition to the more than 1 million refugees in Bangladesh, most of them Rohingya Muslims. Most have sought asylum from violence and persecution at the hands of Myanmar's armed forces. Bachelet says disproportionate military responses to armed resistance have taken place with ferocity in multiple ethnic states. She says the brutal operations employed to quell these areas resemble those employed against the Rohingya in Rakhine State in 2016 and 2017. She says such operations clearly violate international human rights and humanitarian law.
Myanmar is increasingly at risk of state collapse, with shattered economic, education, health, and social protection systems. Collapse of the health system has had devastating consequences for Myanmar's COVID-19 response. The country's precious development gains have been destroyed by conflict and the military's abuse of power.
Bachelet says accountability remains crucial to any solution to this crisis. She urges the international community to take urgent action to halt violence in Myanmar and to respond to the acute humanitarian needs of the people. Myanmar did not respond to the High Commissioner's report because the United Nations does not recognize the legitimacy of the military government. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Making headlines in Asia, Cambodian Foreign Minister Min Aung Hlaing arrived Monday in Myanmar's capital on his mission as a special regional envoy seeking to facilitate peacemaking in the country after the army seized power last year. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia. Countries like Thailand and Cambodia depend on tourism for as much as 10% of their economies, and a majority of their visitors come from Russia. Now, just as countries across Asia reopen for visitors after the COVID-19 shutdowns, international sanctions on Russian banks and airlines are keeping Russian travelers away. VOA News has the story from the Maldives.
Scuba diving instructor Tamara Taratorina of St. Petersburg, Russia, turned her passion for travel into a business 5 years ago. She organizes tours to spots around the world, places such as Egypt, the Maldives, Mexico, for diving enthusiasts. Her business survived the COVID-19 pandemic, but Russia's recent invasion of Ukraine has left Taratorina and a group of Russian tourists stranded in the Maldives. After the invasion, international sanctions leveled against Moscow led Russian air carrier Aeroflot to suspend its international flights, fearing its planes could be seized abroad. Tamara Taratorina is the owner of travel business Dive Together.
All tourists right now are not waiting for the Aeroflot to reschedule their flights. They are buying new tickets with non-Russian air carriers, and it is not cheap. Aeroflot promised to refund the cost of unused portions of the ticket, but those amounts are very small compared to what people have to pay now in order to get new tickets and return home.
Also affecting Russian tourists, their credit cards. MasterCard and Visa have stopped servicing Russian banks, leaving Russians abroad financially strapped. And any cash they brought with them is worth less now that the sanctions have sent the value of Russia's ruble into a free fall. While Russian tourists also don't know if they will be able to afford international travel anytime soon, they're certain that sanctions will dramatically affect their personal lives. Alena Glukhova is a tourist from Russia.
I literally feel how the actions of my government affect my pocket. And until every Russian person will feel it, nothing is going to change. It is only a human thing to care about yourself. And now the situation affects me directly because international companies limited all supply to Russia.
When asked if they're watching how the war is being covered on Russian TV, most said they were not watching and that they get most of their news from the internet and social media. Some of the Russian tourists believe the invasion of Ukraine is a means to help Russians largely inhabiting the Donbass region in eastern Ukraine to stand up for their national identity. The region, partly controlled by pro-Russian separatists since 2014, is a major point of contention between Ukraine and Russia, which last month recognized the Donetsk and Luhansk enclaves as independent republics. Andrei Nikulin, who said he reads multiple online sources for his information, said he believes the reason for the conflict in Ukraine is genocide of Russian people there, which Ukrainians and an overwhelmingly vast numbers of Westerners describe as a talking point of Russian propaganda. Andrei Nikulin is a tourist from Russia.
People have been waiting for 8 years for Russia to help them. At that time, we couldn't intervene. But now, if it weren't for Russia coming, the genocide against Russians in Ukraine would have gotten even worse.
Despite the differing political views of these Russian tourists, they all agreed that the war is a tragedy and the killing of civilians should be avoided at all costs. Olga Kalabuhova is a tourist from Russia.
I've been looking at all this with tears. Me, personally, I am half Russian, half Ukrainian, and I can't pick a side. You realize that it's all politics. The war is manipulated between two brother nations. It will end one day, but the trauma will stay. We need to get through this and need to stay humans on both sides.
That was VOA reporting from the Maldives. Tuesday, March 22nd marks the 29th annual World Water Day. This year's focus is groundwater, which provides fresh water to much of the world. Michelle Quinn reports.
Under the soil, moving slowly through rock layers and inside aquifers, groundwater quietly coexists with us. It is the primary drinking water source for half of the world and a source of water for irrigating crops. And it's in trouble. The theme of this year's World Water Day, a UN observance day, is groundwater, its importance and the threats it faces.
Groundwater is a really fascinating and frankly much under-discussed element of our water cycle.
As rain or snow seeps through the ground, it becomes groundwater, often clean and stored in the earth. Groundwater can be a backup source of water during times of drought when lakes and rivers dry up.
So groundwater is kind of the buffer for many irrigation places in the world to substitute for this lost surface water during droughts.
Environmental advocates are concerned that the world's biggest groundwater aquifers are being depleted faster than they are being replenished, and that can lead to other issues.
So that the ground starts to deplete or sink, and you can't refill that. Like, you can't repump that full of water. Once there's subsidence, you've lost that capacity for water storage.
Groundwater is also threatened by pollution and mismanagement.
And in many cases, the contamination that we see in groundwater is the product of things that were that happened decades back.
Environmental advocates say people should ask where their water comes from and push their elected officials to include water management in setting policies for future growth.
We need to make sure we're looking at the whole system and not just one piece of it.
With the world's population expected to keep growing, experts say that better understanding and managing of the planet's groundwater may be key to our future survival. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. Enjoy your day.